Hello and welcome to the Philanthropy Australia podcast. This week, Philanthropy Australia held its national conference. Its theme was For the Love of Humanity, People, Place and Planet. Now, we all know conferences are about ideas. There's a lot of chat, there's a lot of talking. But who does the listening? This year, we took a new approach to stimulating discussion and engagement with a myriad of issues confronting philanthropy. We decided to introduce three sector leaders to become our keynote listeners. Our three listeners were Naomi Anstess, CEO and Managing Director of Salt Black, Niall Fay, CEO of the Fay Fuller Foundation, and Armine Nalbandian, the CEO of the Centre for Social Impact. During the conference, they were active across a range of sessions, sharing ideas and observations on social media, but also in numerous face-to-face chats with delegates. And then, in the final conference session, they were joined by Lisa George, the global head of Macquarie Group Foundation and co-chair of Philanthropy Australia, to ventilate what they'd heard during the previous 2 days. And that's where we join this discussion.
Thank you so much. I'd like to, of course, acknowledge that we're meeting on the traditional lands of the Gadigal people and pay my respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge Naomi here today as well on the panel and any Aboriginal people in the audience today. So my job is to summarise a few themes from the last couple of days, and the three of you have been tasked over the last couple of days of doing the same thing, and I hope many of you have seen that on LinkedIn. The reflections from our three panelists shared. We'll probably touch on some of those during the conversation. But the themes that I wanted to highlight, just five that came out for me, and I'm sure there are many more that resonated for each of you and for those of you in the room. I think there was a strong theme around reframing our language in philanthropy. The word itself has been contentious over the last couple of days. Dr. Selma Lawrence talked about, you know, just one thing that stood out for me, changing from developing and developed world to majority and minority. Another theme was about representation, and representation matters. And in the the Future Generations panel, Shelley Cable challenged us in saying, if you want to diversify your giving, diversify your teams, which I thought was very powerful. There's another theme around rebalancing power. A lot of talk about power. That came up at a couple of conferences. We're still talking about it, so we haven't solved it yet. But Jack Heath had a beautiful analogy to say a spinning triangle that at full speed becomes a giving circle. Another theme was a strong connection between philanthropy and democracy. His Excellency, the ambassador from Ukraine, put it very powerfully in showing us the real consequences of that that we're all living through. And finally, the love of humanity, the ultimate theme of the conference. And the Honourable Minister Andrew Leigh speaking of the Greek word for the love of humans, agape, and the need for more we and less of me. So those were some of the themes that stood out for me in the days that we've spent together. And so I'd like to throw to each of you to reflect on what were the themes that stood out for you. What did some of these themes that I've mentioned, what did you take away from the conference?
I just, you know, what I saw unfold over the last couple of days was this philanthropic ecosystem, and what started to dawn on me that sometimes you can't see the forest for the trees a little bit. So when we're part of a path and we kind of do our thing in our work, and, you know, we work closely with community and grantees and doing the work, and then you come here and this ecosystem starts to unfold in front of you, which involves, you know, investors and intermediaries and not-for-profits and charities. And then we start talking about the connective tissue and things that are supposed to nourish this ecosystem as well. And we hear about the opportunities to work in partnership and that, Lisa, that theme around power in particular, you know, keeps on reoccurring, and so much power and privilege that the sector holds and we need to call out and acknowledge. But also what kind of starts to come through is, in this ecosystem, who's not in the ecosystem and why not? Who's could be nourishing that ecosystem, or who's outside the ecosystem as beneficiaries of a system maybe casting its benevolence at times, as opposed to actually being a part of this ecosystem. And for me, I think the conversations certainly, and the challenge for those in the room, from my perspective, the non-Indigenous people in the room, is around power and resources and who's controlling those power and resources and how we can start to divulge that as well. And only then can this philanthropic ecosystem be really rich and be really deep and be really nourished and deliver outcomes. And certainly that, for me, kind of was a theme that came out pretty strongly.
Naomi, would you like to go? Naomi or Amine?
Naomi, you go.
I'd like to also acknowledge the Gadigal and the Eora Nation for having us here and bring the sweet salt water blessings from our warm, salty waters in Darwin and Larrakia country all the way here to the colder waters. I'd like to acknowledge the chairman of the Larrakia Nation, who's also in the room, and my colleague and CEO of the Northern Territory Indigenous Business Network, Jerome Cabillo. Jerome, you should wave so people can see who you are. You should try to find him later in the day, and I'll explain that a bit as we get on. I'm an Arab Darnley Island and Gomeroi woman. I'm five generations born on Larrakia country. I am very nervous right now and finding it hard to be grounded when my legs are too short to touch the ground with any sort of solidness. I'd like to also acknowledge Philanthropy Australia and Jack for inviting me to partake in this conference after he heard, my little random voice at a different conference. I got to take a lot of things away from this because I guess this is not my space and you're not my people and this is not my thing. And philanthropy is so important to so many movements. I guess as a First Nations woman, I feel like it's a thing that's there that we try to see, touch and feel and get, but we don't know how and we don't know where. And I think I learned so much about the different types of entities that exist in terms of giving, the different types of structures that may prevent the type of giving we think we're trying to get. And that's really important because I guess, and going back to a conversation we heard today, and I think it was Marie talked about, you know, that binary, that thinking about that binary relationship between philanthropist and receiver, it's important to acknowledge actually there's no requirement for philanthropy if you don't have a receiver. And the importance of that power dynamic and the nuance of power as a conversation is really critical, I guess. When I think about the perspective of the industry that I'm coming out of, the Northern Territory Indigenous Business Network, we talk a lot about how we empower the generation of wealth for our people. And really quickly, I need to probably define a message for us. We talk so often for Aboriginal people, for First Nations, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, about the need to improve education, health, housing, justice, so that we can generate wealth and close this gap. But what I know is if I have got wealth, I can buy education, health, housing, and justice. And it's an important concept to understand because we're trying to flip on its head the notion of Aboriginal charity and First Nations charity and that empowerment of cash and the Canva radicals wherever you are. You know, thank you for thinking about those things. And yesterday we heard about unrestricted giving. And that unrestricted giving is really important to us so that we can have some self-determined ways of dealing with the cash we get in the ways that we know will make the difference, as opposed to what you think will make the difference for us. Those are some things that came out for me, but the theme around power was really important and the other theme around visibility. And I'll touch on that really quickly. I wrote something briefly about that today, but that was about, you know, as wonderful as it has been to sit here and listen to the wonderful intent and the commitment from the philanthropists across Australia, you know, who are so really committed, and I'm so happy about that. It's so enriching. I guess today I felt really invisible as a First Nations person. I sat here and I listened to how we talked about international giving and how much we need to do and all of the things happening overseas and the nuances of other cultures and entities and how we need to be relational with them and how we need to recognise place and people in that conversation. And everybody oohed and aahed about that. But we've been talking about that. We've been saying it. And when we're asking you to recognise us in the same way that you're recognising international giving from that cultural ethics point of view, I don't think we're being seen. And I feel like as First Nations people, and I apologise if this is... Actually, I don't apologise.
Don't apologise.
My challenge to you is to see us. See us. Hear us. Feel us. Because this theme, people, place, planet, that is us. All the new ways of doing, thinking, knowing and being that everybody is celebrating here, co-leadership, co-management, new strategies, dynamic thinking, networking, they are black. They are First Nations. And we do this. And when you're talking about and accepting the international cultural differences, please challenge yourself as to why you don't accept that for us. Because I hear a conversation that says it's been 200 years, get over it, you're in the lucky country. I hear that, and I hear that openly, I hear that quietly, and I hear that in action. So my challenge and in the learnings, some of the takeaway for me was I don't want to be invisible, and I don't want my children to be invisible, and I don't want their children to be invisible. So I'd like to, I guess, explore that a little bit more.
Well, thank you for naming it. Thank you. Thank you for naming it. I think that's really, it's really important. It's, as you said, I think in your post, you felt a conflict because it is, the international giving is, of course, important. Yep. But so thank you for putting words to that. And Amine, a tough piece to follow, but as the CEO of the Centre for Social Impact, so much of the conference themes was around impact and measurement of impact and lots of academic talk about impact. What did that mean to you as the new CEO of the Centre for Social Impact?
Yeah, can I, before getting to that, can I just say when we first got together to do this exercise and they were explaining to the three of us, you know, what you have to do, it's interesting because that's where my listening began. Naomi actually talked a lot about the power imbalance even then, and you talked about ownership, and that's really stuck with me. So thank you so much for sharing that. That was really incredible. I am in, of course, a very academic institution. I am the type of person who is itching for a solution, and it is really hard to pause and say, actually, that's not always helpful. You kind of have to listen a lot for a long time before you're even close to anything that feels or sounds like a solution. So there are bits of this that, as a reforming solutionist, were really, really compelling to me, and I think allowed me a lot of space to pause and say, okay, what's CSI's role in this? What is my role in this individually? There was a lot of self-reflection, which surprised me, actually. And I think taking the opportunity, which I genuinely want to thank Philanthropy Australia. It was crazy. I don't recommend it to anybody else. It is very taxing. You guys are evil, but it was actually so, so, so beneficial to have to listen, not to check your emails, not to check your phone calls, not to be waiting until the other person's done so you can say what you want to say, but to really pause and listen and really try to hear. And that was an incredible challenge. So thank you for giving me that opportunity. I think some of the things that really stuck out to me, looking at ways we can lead by stepping back, I think Glenn McDonald said that in the first session, and I kind of thought, okay, that's really interesting. What is it about refocusing systems? You know, what are the tools in that toolkit? Actually went to a great session today on participatory grant making that the Center for Evidence and Implementation ran, and I kind of thought, you know, these are the things that they're nascent. It's so interesting that they're so nascent. And for me, working in an academic setting, constantly being in the really privileged space of having the opportunity to test these things, I'm surprised by how we're having some of the conversations that now seem obvious. And it's interesting to reflect on your comments, because that has been something that, you know, we're sort of coming and saying, oh, well, we're new to it. And you're like, yeah, I can sense your frustration, because it's like, well, we've been doing this for millennia, you know? We have a lot to learn. So I think I've taken a lot from that. I've thought about, I think, a lot of self-reflection about what's absent in my own mental models and what is it that's stopping me from thinking, why do I jump to solutions? You know, how do I kind of conceptualize the world? I think the kind of challenges that were that were posed on day one by Stan Grant, which I found interesting, but you know, I'm an eternal optimist, so that was sort of, I've heard a lot of reflection about that I would call I'm trying not to use the word solutions, wow, that I would call a reaction to what Stan said and what some of the anxiety we're all feeling in this time. There's so much hope there. And I think there, I know hope is a fraught word as well, but there's action in that hope. There's actually, you know, there's steps that we're taking now. This as a conference that actually, it's not like most conferences I've been to. I really felt a shift in thinking. I felt, you know, there's so much more to do, but there's created an opportunity for us to feel a little bit uncomfortable, have some conversations that we don't normally get to have, speak to people that we perhaps don't normally get to speak to, and most importantly, reflect on, well, who's not here? You know, what is it we're doing that we can improve on? So I think there's a lot of hope and optimism in the future generation, the generations coming up, really interested in some of the models that were discussed that I want to understand more deeply, and most importantly for CSI, there's a lot of opportunity for further development, I think, in emerging and existing leaders and in the kind of social impact ecosystem more broadly. And there's so many things that I think we just, as a takeaway, can go and try to think about how we address in a way that is going to move this conversation forward in 2 years' time.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the future of philanthropy and where we think it needs to go. I think, you know, there have been some challenging conversations about the legitimacy of philanthropy, and I think it's great that we're having this conversation, because if we don't have it, then it will be had about us, I think. Anyone who wants to pick this up, I don't know what you think about where you think philanthropy needs to go in the future.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a nice way to continue on from the hope and possibility conversation, right? Which is great, and it's lovely to sit in. And I think what we came out, you know, from Stan's grounding reality as he laid out in front of us, shall we say, to the offset of hope and possibility of what philanthropy could be and what it could unlock and what it could enable and the spaces it can create and the change it can catalyze and those that it can be a part of, to spending 2 days of exploring what some of those levers might be as well, and what does participatory grant making look like. And for me, you know, one of the provocations as well was, you know, is philanthropy in a good place? Is it in a key opportunity of change or not in a good place at all? And for me, it's kind of like, surely the future of philanthropy is constantly changing. Like it's constantly adapting. It's constantly reflecting on itself to kind of say, are we doing this? Are we doing this well? Are we doing this better? And it's not to beat up philanthropy, and it's not to beat up wealth. It's to recognize, it's to name, and to navigate those things in meaningful ways as well. So the future of philanthropy, I think, is reflective of what we're doing, how we're doing it, who's part of that conversation, who's leading it, you know, who for, who with, leading, following. So I think we're in a launch pad moment where we can build some solid structures of reflection and change for philanthropy to constantly reflect on itself. And I, you know, we saw that the last couple of days. We start to have the tools to do that.
Naomi, we were talking about who's in and who's out of philanthropy. And we were talking about that, you know, who's missing? Who is missing from this ecosystem in your mind?
I don't know if I have enough knowledge to say who's missing, and to tell you the truth, I think obviously it's wonderful for me to be here, for my colleague Jerome to be here, to be part of the conversation, to find out how and why and when and how do we get in. And I've seen a number of other my First Nations brothers and sisters here leading the way, presenting and otherwise, but also as part of foundations and organisations. I guess I was asking a question around, who's a First Nations philanthropist who owns their bucket of money, who's doing the donating? And that takes me back to Stan, who, you know, that was, you put it really nicely. I forget what you said, but I thought to myself, Stan was brutal. He was brutal. And I was like, that's it, brother, tell it like it is. And like you said, we went into this conversation around hope. And Niall and I had a conversation that kind of went, hope, you know, and I'll go back to that piece that says, I've been in that state of despair and hope and despair and hope and despair and hope and despair and hope. I don't have time, because my kids will die earlier than yours. I will die earlier than you. You know, I had a suicide in my family last week. I've had 6 in the last 12 months. I don't have time to sit around while you play hope. So who's not here? Blackfellas with wealth. Wealth that we're paying for. There might be some, and thank you, Blackfellas, leading the way. But where are we with that wealth? And Stan also talked about something that I think was really critical to this conversation, the difference of capital wealth versus income wealth or job wealth. And what's the theme for Blackfellas everywhere? Jobs, 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 more jobs. Let's get jobs. Well, at the NTIBM, we say, you know what? I don't know if we care about jobs as much as we care about the generation and acceleration of the generation of wealth for our people through self-determined opportunities in business enterprise where we can actively be commercial. So I'm not answering your question, I know, but I think okay. I think where I want to go with that is the challenge again to think about how we invest in Aboriginal entities. What are we investing? Are we investing in those charitable movements, or are we investing in self-determination? And when I own a business as an Aboriginal business owner, I determine the rules of my business. I created a goddamn job for myself and everybody else I employed. I am 100% more likely to employ other Aboriginal people, and guess where the profits go? Right? I'm generating my wealth, and then I'm generating inheritable wealth for my children, for them to use for their children. And I start to change the game and have a significant but acute impact on me and mine. Mm. And our people do that for each other. We are also more likely to invest back into our community. So we are by nature and by action philanthropists. And it was wonderful to hear that today from you about anybody can be a philanthropist by action or even a dollar. And I was really happy to know I meet that 1% mark. I went through and did my maths a bit on it. So I'm feeling good. I'm maybe challenged myself to get to 2%. But yeah, I think those things are also important.
Well, we talked about this goal of doubling giving.
Yeah.
And inherent in that is, I mean, we've talked about the growth. We haven't talked about the need to grow wealth more broadly, I suppose, in society, and how that could drive, you know, if we had more wealth in certain communities, that could also drive more giving and more philanthropy. So that's been absent.
And the more that we build it through our own businesses, through our own self-determined way, because also it's a bit like freehold land. It's a bit like freehold land. There's a misconception in this nation that we've got all these assets and we're land rich and your government gives us all these houses. First of all, land rights is just kidding. We get named as the native title owners or the owners of land, but then we have to go through these processes that could take up to 3 years if we wanted to even try and build a house or start a business on our own country. And the only opportunities we have are royalty opportunities, not equity on project opportunities, where the real wealth is. The system itself shuts us out and makes us invisible.
Well, maybe in few years' time when we're at the next conference, there'll be a lot more, to your point, where the black philanthropists will have more in the room. Let's aim for that.
Challenge.
Yeah, challenge for all of us. And Amine, the future of philanthropy, what are your reflections on where you think?
I'm very positive. I think actually a couple of things, different models. I mean, I thought the Start Giving conversation with Antonia this morning was really interesting. I mean, that is just a new way of looking at things. What Daniel Petrie's done there, I think, is brilliant, and kind of saying, actually I was reflecting on the Winklers and this idea that let's get to the wealth before you feel the wealth. You're fighting against human incentives otherwise. If you get really used to being comfortable, it's very hard to be uncomfortable. But if you haven't gotten used to it yet, there's something really, and taking advantage of the generational change, you know, the sort of optimism about being able to move the dial on social inequality and the understanding of the enormous challenges with income and wealth inequality and what that does to our kind of humanity. And of course, we heard a lot about the state of democracy. And I think that's, you know, it's all interconnected. So I'm actually really positive because I think the generation coming up gets that. I think there's a lot to look at in new models, very buoyed by the fact that we're leading the way in Australia with something like Start Giving. So there's a lot going on. And I think there's a lot of space for optimism as a result.
I've been asking a lot of questions about the philanthropy side of this equation, but of course, many people in the room are on the, I think to use Kevin Starr's term, on the doer side. So I'm just curious on any of your reflections on the state of the nonprofit sector in this conversation and how you think their voice has been represented in the last couple of days and in this conversation about power, etc.
I don't think I'm best placed to speak to the state of the not-for-profit sector. But what I can speak from is experience over the last 2 or 3 years is the experiences that we have had around building relationships and having high trust relationships with the not-for-profit space, with our community-led partners and the organisations emerging from community. And what it takes if you sit in that space and time and build relationships and build trust, and you know, we unpack things like pay what it takes and untied funding and all of those bits and pieces, what we've seen are not-for-profits and partners who have thrived under that type of relationship, where we sit at a table together to discuss the commonality of intent and then kind of break down what our roles are and how those are different, right? Mm-hmm. So we sit here and recognise our role as a funder and what we can resource and bring and the power and privilege that comes with the ability to resource. And they go, great, we can use that in these ways and we can unlock this for you. And then all of a sudden, we're sitting in a really great space together, shared intent, shared impact, where we've played different roles. And so all I can speak to is, and I don't know about the zombie not-for-profits, you know, that kind of, that 50% of zombie not-for-profits. It's a beautiful, beautiful slide, you know, and I love The Walking Dead. So, you know, it was, but, you know, our experiences are that not-for-profits are working their asses off to make change. Mm. And they're swimming against tides. And our role in philanthropy sometimes is, you know, to... We can't stop those tides, but maybe every now and then, you know, we can pull up alongside in a canoe and kind of let them rest together while we do some of the paddling while they while we're going upstream. So,
okay. Amina, you're now leading a nonprofit.
Yeah, and we have, you know, sort of an interesting role because we are in the ecosystem. Of course, are not-for-profit ourselves, but are there to help enable the work of not-for-profits and the for-purpose sector more broadly. So I think it's so obvious we've had in Australia all of these natural disasters. We've had COVID. There's absolutely all the evidence, and indeed CSI's own work shows that not-for-profits are truly under the pump and the resourcing hasn't lifted to match that. And I think that kind of question of, again, reason for optimism, there were conversations about pay what it takes. There were conversations about funding things like measurement. You know, you can't say you have to be evidence-based, yeah. you have to know where you're going and then not fund it. It doesn't work that way. It is expensive. As somebody who does that, you know, we do that work, it is not cheap. And, you know, we've built tools at CSI like Amplify Platform and a number of others that help make that more accessible, make it cheaper. But it's still a really big task. So I think recognizing that bridging the gap between where the funders sit and the needs of funders and where not-for-profits sit and the realities and stresses there is really important. So I think we've actually talked about a lot of those issues, which I'm quite buoyed by.
Naomi, what have we missed? Anything missing from this conversation?
I'm kind of feeling really square peg, round hole.
Business.
And we're talking about letting us be for profit.
Yeah.
Because Aboriginal business by definition in this country is set up for the benefit of community. Yeah. All business by definition is set up for the benefit of community. Or why would you do it? No one would buy it if there had no benefit. But for us, if we get into business, if the government's going to recognise us as an Indigenous business, we've got to be saving the world and our people. Whereas if you get into business, non-Aboriginal or non-Torres Strait Islander people, you can get in the business to pay off your mortgage and make a bit of money so that you can become a philanthropist, for example. But we can't do that. So we're kind of battling that tide. And something that I know, and the data tells us and the research tells us, is that for businesses to be successful, the key definer at the beginning is capital. And we are in the lowest socioeconomic group in Australia. We are living in fourth world conditions. We have the highest rates of youth suicide, overcrowding, homelessness, you know, and shamefully, the highest rates of rheumatic heart disease in the world in our communities in the Northern Territory, in the world. So our capital up front is not there. So what we're trying to do at the Northern Territory Indigenous Business Network, and I'm learning how, and there are a few people I'll be calling after this, is trying to establish some of that capital that we need, you know, that from venture philanthropy, to be able to help our businesses with the really good ideas in the back end. So we do a lot of support of the back end and the growth to make sure that they can come to life so that our own micro enterprises can self-determine their worth and create new economies that keep money in community. As a doer, I guess, I'm a doer, but I'm not in the not-for-profit. I've been there. and done a bit of that. But as a doer, I want to know how we have those conversations, you know, that will help us to put together some of that capital so we can put together our sustainable models. We need the seed funding to be able to do those things. And we're working on the premise of, if you help us just get the seed funding, we'll start making our own money and then we'll be okay. We don't want to be doing this forever.
Yeah.
So I've found lots of this really challenging. And before I chuck back out, I just want to say thank you to people. Like, there's such a focus on First Nations. And I know I said I felt invisible. It's not in the way that you think. I guess I see that you are trying to hear us and trying to get on that journey and trying to start or find the hook. We are so grateful that we are ready and it's the right time. We are really, really grateful, and I'm especially grateful for the opportunity to have a voice, maybe to speak for some of us who don't really have one.
Thank you.
I don't think you need to be grateful. I think it's just is how it should be. So thank you for being here and for lending your voice and perspective and that different perspective of, you know, the business, the other pillar that we haven't perhaps spent as much time talking about in the conversations in the last couple of days. I think we're probably at time, so we will wrap it there and just say thank you so much to our three keynote listeners who have been hard at work, really hard at work for the last couple of days, attending all the sessions and paying very close attention. Please thank Niall, Amine, and Naomi.
You've been listening to the Philanthropy Australia podcast. I'm Nick Richardson. Thanks for listening.